Greetings, urban farmers, gardeners, and healthy food visionaries. Farmer Greg here, and welcome to the 807th episode of the Urban Farm Podcast, where every day we work to educate and inspire you to become part of your food revolution. Welcome, everybody. Greg Peterson coming to you from Urban Farm U at our new farm in Asheville, North Carolina, called Goodness Grows Organics. I'm here with Bill McDorman. Welcome, Bill.
Hello, Greg. Good morning.
So today we're talking about seeds, dead or alive. Don't throw away those seeds you've collected for years. Do a germ test. Germination testing is a vital step to ensure seed viability before planting. We're going to talk about the process and show you how to determine the ratio of successful germination. Then you can plant the germinated seeds right into the ground. Learning how to germ test empowers growers with crucial insights into seed quality, helping you make informed decisions on seed selection and planting strategies. Well, I'm going to say thank you, Belle, for that great description. She always gives us great descriptions. And seed germ testing.
Well, this is another one of those things that we do in our seed schools. Mm-hmm. To empower people. There's this general notion that if you want your seeds germination tested, you have to send them off to a lab. And I hear that over and over, especially seed libraries, or it's like it's got to be done officially. Otherwise, it's not a good test. Yeah, official somehow.
Really? That is a huge myth.
It's a huge myth. And that myth was really busted in a way, because we had an RST, a registered seed technologist. So for any of you out there that love the lab, your lab classes in high school chemistry, or just really like that kind of work, and you want to do this for a living, you can become a seed germinator as your profession. And if you did that, you would go to the University of Mississippi, it used to be, and I haven't checked for a few years, had a 3-week summer course. And you could do a course and get trained and get your license, get your official certificate as a registered seed technologist. And then you could go to work for a lab or a seed company. And it used to be that it was only really large seed companies that hired RSTs. But this whole thing is run by the American Association of Seed Analysts. That's just a semi-private sector governmental body that overlooks the rules for testing seeds. So they'll teach you all those rules and how to access all the information you need to do it right. Well, at one of our seed schools, he had an RST show up for seed school.
Really?
Yeah, raised her hand. We got to the germination part and she goes, oh, I know how to do this. That's what I do. And so I was a bit nervous because we've been teaching people how to do it. And I thought, oh no, I've been doing something wrong. You always have to question yourself. And she sort of co-taught what we were doing, but what we were teaching is exactly what they do there. Mm-hmm. There is no official. You can learn to do this at home just as well as they do in labs. They have more fancy equipment now. They can automate it. They do it on larger scales. But for small scale stuff, they do it exactly the same way. And so that's what we want to teach you today.
Colorado State University Online has a certificate in seed and science technology.
There you go.
Prepares you to take qualifying exams to work as a registered seed technologist. And then analyze.seeds.com. is for the Pacific Northwest region. Wow. So this is a thing. So you and I have been working together for 15 years, and this is the first I've heard of this. That's pretty amazing.
See, it's a deep field, huh? Wait, think about it. If you have millions of pounds of seed, which is what they have in the Northwest every year with just the wheat crop alone that comes in, and you figure out how to increase the germination percentage of your wheat seed just a little bit, it's priceless.
Yeah.
You can see why people pay attention to this on a large scale. And so, yeah, you can learn to do this stuff. But again, you can do it at home, and there's a number of different ways to do it. And what we found is that if you're on a small scale, you're either a seed library, you don't have to do it anymore. That was a proposal for a while that seed libraries would have to do their own germ testing in order to officially be able to give out seeds in their library. And that is not the case. There still may be some seed control officials in some states that think that's the case. But generally, nationwide, the seed control officials have decided that's not necessary. But if you want to know, it's pretty easy to do. And I guess that's what we're going to talk about today.
Cool. Let's jump in and do it. Well, let's define what it is.
Seeds will stay dormant. And we know some of them have been carbon dated to last for 2,000 years. We've got lots of examples of beans and corn in the Southwest that were 600 years old. And then they germinated. What caused that germination? What germinations, when they break their dormancy, the little radical comes out, goes into the ground, and the seed starts to grow. That's what germination is, when that process starts. And it's enzyme. Enzymes are a way to explain what's going on, but the process is driven by two things. It's got to be warm enough. That's a necessary condition. It can't be too cold. And it's got to have water. It's got to be moist. And so that's what basically what we're doing is putting seeds in a controlled situation and keeping them warm and moist and watching that process where they break their dormancy.
And that's the opposite of what we teach people on storing seeds: cool, dark, and dry.
Exactly. Awesome. That'll keep them dormant. We want to germinate. We want them to grow. And in fact, that's the number one reason. This was my 28 years experience running a small seed company and hearing occasionally every year I would get the same story: your seeds don't work. And I go, excuse me? This is before the internet and people would call me.
Yeah.
Excuse me? What do you mean my seeds don't work? I just bought a bunch of seeds from your seed company, Seeds Trust, High Altitude Gardens, and none of them worked. And when somebody said none of them worked, I knew it was their fault. Yeah. And how do I know? It was just experience over the decades.
Yeah.
That it's almost impossible to kill all the seed in a packet. It's almost impossible. Seeds are just beyond that. They're more resilient. And the number one reason why I would get that call is that people would start that process. They would get their seeds moist and they would start to, each seed absorbs moisture. And then that starts all these enzymes kicking in. And then it would break apart. And that little radical, we call it, which is the first root, would come out of the seed and look for moisture. So from the time that process starts, and it varies in different vegetables and grains or whatever, different plants, from the time that starts, it first gets moist until that little radical gets down deep enough in the soil to get its own moisture.
Mm-hmm.
If it dries out, it's dead.
Mm.
It's fragile. That's the most fragile part of the whole growing cycle. And that's what people would do. They would water their garden in the morning and they'd live in a place where the soil would totally bake dry by 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And so the process would start and then everything would get killed. And then, of course, it was my fault.
Yeah.
And so just keep that in mind. So germination can help you in more than one way. It can not only help you decide whether or not it's worth planting seeds, that there's enough of them still alive to plant for your time, but it can also help you get over that hump. Just think about germination on a really micro level like that, and you'll have fewer failures. So let's just get into what we're talking about, what we're doing. Basically, a standard germination test, even done in labs, is done on a paper towel. They have special paper towels. Anchor is the paper company if you want to buy the official paper. And the only difference really is that seeds don't stick to it as well. So it's easier later to pick them back off. But paper towels work. A great substitute that we found, somebody in one of our seed schools pointed this out.
Wait. Coffee filters.
Coffee filters.
Okay, good. My brain does work.
Yeah, it does work. Coffee filters can work. I still use paper towels. And basically what you do then is lay out a grid of dry individual seeds, whatever you're testing, on the paper towel. So if you want to make the math easy, you do 10 by 10, mm-hmm. right? 10 across, 10 down. And I do it in the upper half of the paper towel, or at least the upper two thirds of it. And I leave an open space on the bottom. So when I roll it up, I can get the roll started before I actually get to the seeds.
Oh, very good.
Now, when I got to Native Seed Search, which is an official seed bank with $1 million budget, they were only using 5 seeds across and 5 seeds down. 25 seeds is all they would use in their germ test. Mm-hmm. If you read the official rules for seed testing, usually it takes 100.
Yeah.
And then you use several replications of that to make sure that there's nothing messing you up. I only used 1 replication. I would do 100 seeds, and then it's easy. You roll the paper towel up. And if you learn how to do it, you can roll some paper over the next line of seeds to hold them in place, mm-hmm. and then roll it a little more over the next line. And then roll it over the next line. And all those seeds will stay into place and you'll get a little paper towel roll. And then you want to dampen it.
And mark what's in there.
Usually what we've learned to do is on that other side of the paper towel, before you even start up at the top, write down what it is and the date. You got to have the date. That's important. Yeah. Usually things will start to germinate within 5 to 10 days. There's some things that take a week to 2 weeks. Carrot seeds take the longest probably of all the vegetable seeds that I used to do. And white Sonora wheat will pop in a day or two sometimes.
As will basil.
On the other side of the spectrum. You want to have them marked. And then what you do is keep those in a place you'd want to be, 70 degrees. Sometimes I'll slip my rolls into a Ziploc bag. I'll leave it open, the bag, at one end. I don't want it a totally moist, tight environment, because when I've done that, then I get mold sometimes. Mm-hmm. So you don't want the mold to happen. And I'll leave it in there the 3 to 5 to 7 to 10 days. Again, if you want to know exactly how long and at what temperature to keep them, you can go to AOSA, the American Association of Seed Analysts, and they've got the rules for seed testing. Mm-hmm. And it outlines for each different kind of vegetable and most of the grains and pulses, how long it takes to do an official test and what the temperatures are. I always ballparked it. Week, I'd check. If it wasn't, I'd roll it back up and put it in for a little while longer. But almost everything pops within a week to 10 days.
Yeah.
And then all you do is count. And usually, if you're growing and testing your own seed, it will be so good. You'll go, oh my God, everything germinated, which is so different than seed we buy. It's well known in the industry, if you're just buying run-of-the-mill seed in a packet down at Home Depot, that blending takes place. Yes. What is blending? Blending, it turns out that these seed control officials also have rules for the minimum germination rate at which seeds can be sold. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's as low as 60%, say for some of the herbs, 70 to 80% for most of the vegetables. Some of them are a little bit higher, but you can get a sheet that'll give you the minimum germ percentage. If, say, 80% of your carrot seeds won't germinate, then you can't officially sell them. Mm. Industry has taken the other view, right? They'll buy seed, carrot seed, they'll germ test it, it'll germ test at 100%. So they'll mix in 20% dead carrot seed from years past to bring it down to 80% and thereby increase their supply 20%. So it's not unusual to have a 10, 20, 30, or even 40% of dead seed in a packet of seeds. It was routine. In fact, I stopped counting how many little radicals, and that's how you tell. The seed will burst open. You can see it. The ones that have not moved or changed at all are the ones that didn't germinate. And so instead of counting the ones that germinate, you go 88, 89, 90, 91, 92. You just quickly look and count the ones that didn't.
Didn't. Yeah,
and
that
subtract.
makes sense.
One, two, three, or four is more standard. And then that's your subtract that from 100, and that's your germ percentage. If you're doing five across and five down, and I did that sometimes when I only had a handful of seeds. I
Right.
didn't have very many. I didn't want to plant all 100. I would just do 25. Then you have to multiply that number by four, but you could still get the germ percentage. And then, as you alluded to at the beginning of the program, bonus. If you have 100 germinated little seeds, what's wrong with planting them? You know they're going to work. And so we've had a lot of fun over the years doing that with our fingers or tweezers or whatever, carefully. You don't want to disturb that little radical because there's a little root hairs on it. But as carefully as you can, just put that into a little bit of soil and cover it up. And there you go. You've just saved yourself a week to 10 days to 2 weeks to get planted.
What about germ testing in small pots?
Perfect. My father used to plant our tomatoes for high altitude gardens way back in the day in flats. We built our own flats. And then we would have a little spacer thing and we would plant 100 plants in a flat. And so that's what he would do. He would just put 100 seeds in a flat and then count however many came up. Duh. That's actually a more real world, better test, right?
Yeah.
Because sometimes they'll germinate in paper and they still won't make it in the real world. There's still something wrong with them. They won't be vigorous enough or something. But here you go. You can just do it. So we used to we stacked functions, as they say in permaculture, right?
Yes.
Did the germ test and got our seedlings for the year for our tomato seed production.
Excellent.
Let's summarize. You can do this. You can do it with paper towels. You can do it in a relatively short period of time using very little of your own energy. You can discover that even old seeds that you thought were not going to be worth it, maybe are worth it. If you have a batch of really old seeds, a bag your grandfather gave you, or one that somebody found in a garage a long time ago, and you want to do a germ test, reach to the center of the bag or the can or the box or the bowl. Why? Because seeds are almost the perfect storage container for seeds, right? They absorb moisture and they insulate. So, our goal, as you said, was to keep things cool, dark, and dry. Seeds themselves keep themselves cool, dark, and dry inside the middle of a little seed womb. So always reach in there and get them out. And my guess, and this is just my 40 years experience, in almost every case, I underestimated how many seeds would germinate. Every time I thought seeds were dead, totally, I was proven wrong. I just kept getting slapped in the face year after year. Time after time, when I
Nice.
gave up, they would work better than I thought. And so that's where my optimism comes. Is that the people that are dealing with seeds are going to become optimists too? Why? Because they're being taught by the masters, right? You're being around seeds again, which is an abundant replicative system that's just filled with magic and wonder and surprise.
And the truth of the matter is even if you get a 10 or a 20% germination rate, you get a 10 or a 20% germination rate, you got plants growing, right?
Yeah, exactly. And especially if you have a self-pollinating plant, which are the grains, most of the grains and tomatoes and peppers and lettuce and peas and beans. If you have any of those, just a handful of plants, even one could help keep alive a whole line that would die otherwise. As seed stewards, we've seen way too much lost. Estimates are that we're on the verge of losing 90% of the diversity we once had at exactly the time we need the most diversity. And in fact, that's long been my prediction, that in 100 years, when people look back at that era, there's going to be some anger. And the anger is not going to be about our politics and all the stuff we did and how we fought and we were selfish and whatever. The anger is going to be over the fact that we right in front of our own noses, lost sight of what was most important for fulfilled human lives. And that is all the abundance and diversity around us.
Yeah.
It's, dude, how can you lose 90% of your agricultural diversity? It's just, that's just insane.
Say more about what that is for people that don't have the background on that.
That's the United Nations testing, the best that I've seen. And you'll see statistics floating around like this about, especially around organizations that want you to save your own seed. And there's there's no way to know what we've lost, right? That was Colin Curry, who used to work at the National Seed Storage Laboratory, said once, how do you count what you've lost? By definition, you can't.
Yeah.
It's lost, right? It's lost. So it's all an estimation. You can go into a representative sample of gardens and farms worldwide and do surveys of exactly what people are planting now and compare that with records from the past. And when you do that in 1990, they found that 90% of the diversity of the numbers of the different kinds of things being grown in farms and gardens worldwide, 90% of that was no longer being planted.
Wow.
And that's a recipe for losing it. Because now people always say, we've got all the gene banks, we've got the big seed banks, right? That's what the 70s and 80s were about. We collected millions of things and put them in seed banks. We did. And that was a good idea. And we've saved some things that are now gone by doing that. That's not a bad thing. Yeah.
But mostly they're locked away and nobody can get them.
Guess what? It's 60, 70 years later now, and they all need to be grown out. Not all. Yeah. But a lot of them do, and nobody has the money. In fact, nobody wants to pay for the seed banks to exist anyway, anymore. Their budgets, there's one in particular that is in financial straits, so much so that you can't get seeds out if you're in the United States. This is one of the great Seaguard gene banks. They just have, basically, they're running on fumes. And when the Global Crop Diversity Trust added up what it would cost just to turn the lights on, and then started an endowment fund to raise the funds so that would always be the case, they can't even come close to raising the amount of money they need worldwide right now to even do that. And so there's all your stuff. And so my call, and maybe the most important thing I tell people, is that think about it. Save the diversity. Pay attention to everything. And if somebody gives you old, dead, dry seeds and say, these are probably dead, germ test them and help us keep them alive and bring them back. Just for that reason alone, we need, because you never know, it may be disease resistant in a way you never dreamed. It may survive fires. It may survive floods. It may survive global climate change in your area in a way that nobody could have predicted. That's what diversity does. It's our insurance policy. So we've never needed it more at a time when it's never been more threatened. And so be a hero out there. Just pay attention and have fun. Yeah, this stuff's easy and fun.
While you were sharing all that, there's a school teacher that you've told a story about that manages saved seeds with the help of his high school students.
Right. I believe I'm pronouncing it right. Manotuck in Maine is a high school that's actually the largest seed bank in Maine now.
Wow.
And basically, when you're a freshman, you start taking biology classes. Everybody does. But it's all around a really important topic, which is how to save all this agricultural diversity. And you learn germ testing. And you learn all the proper ways to steward and grow and clean and process and catalog seeds. And so they maintain a gene bank, basically, as part of a high school. And in the process, teach real-world biology and mathematics and genetics and all the things that come with that. Really a great idea. It just shows the capacity that we have in this country. We have high schools all over. If that became a national program, we could do this overnight. Every high school could be where you get your seeds. and your kids would be leading the charge.
Oh, wouldn't that be awesome?
And feeling empowered.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of what's wrong with a lot of teenagers these days in depression. Is it social media-induced depression?
And they don't feel empowered.
Yeah, they just don't feel empowered. Or that there's a future. And you deal around, if you're around seeds very much, you go, hell yeah, there's a future. Look at what happened.
Right.
It happens to you all the time. Yeah, you've got to shake your head.
Yeah.
So I want to say one more thing about germination. There's a problem if you want to use this germination test method, if you have wildflower seeds, especially in North America.
Really?
The northern tiers. And that is, many of the seeds that come from the wilds need a cold period before they germinate. It's called stratification. It's a term that came out of the forest tree seed industry years ago, where they would layer seeds in paper in order to test their germ, and they were all stratified. All right, so it really doesn't directly apply, but we call that cold stratification now. And so the problem is that's a whole nother set of rules. How long do you have to keep your seeds cooled before they germinate? When I was in Idaho, we had some generalizations that emerged. One came out of the seed lab in Ogden, Utah for the Forest Service that said that keep your seeds cold, and they don't have to be frozen. They can be in a refrigerator instead of a freezer, but keep them cold as long as they would be under snow in your area. Mm-hmm. So wherever your wildflowers are. So that led to some really interesting discoveries. If you collected your penstemon seeds at 9,000 feet, they were under snow for 5 months. But you could find the same species down at 5,000 feet, and they were only under snow for a month. And so there's all sorts of stuff you have to learn. But you can't just roll it up in a paper towel and wait for a week. So what the industry has done, because now they're being called, there's more and more people want to plant wildflower seeds. There's more and more native calls to use natives. They found a workaround. And the workaround is called tetrazoleum. It's a chemical. Mm-hmm. And you got to be a registered teacher on most of the online sites I went to. Science, you buy it from a science house. Tetrazoleum, you either have to be a teacher or you have to have some sort of license or whatever they ask you to make sure you're a professional. I always just checked yes. And what you do, it's a really concentrated little bottle of tetrazoleum. All right. And tetrazoleum, then you could put one or two drops in a petri dish filled with water and then put your seeds in it and let them, your dry seeds that you want to germ test. So you can, yeah, same thing. You put 100 seeds in there, put 25, put some number so you can see them and let them sit. I used to let mine sit overnight and I would come back the next day. And if they turned red, then they were alive. So what tetrazoleum does is it detects and changes color if there's transpiration, if the seed is actually still breathing, even a little bit. And every seed is, they're living embryos, right? And so then you just count the number of red seeds. It's not quite that easy because there's some pink ones. There's, again, this is where registered seed technologists get into the subtleties, but generally you can see if they're alive or not. Now, this doesn't tell you if they will germinate or not, but it tells you they're alive. And so sometimes now if you buy bags, say Applewood Seed is a great online wildflower seed company, and we've dealt with them, Greg.
Yep.
With the Great American Seed Up, Gene Milstein, great guy, started it 40 years ago or so.
Wow.
If you buy Applewood seeds and you look at the tag that comes on the seeds, which tells you what it is, they're required by law to tell you if there's any weed seed in it, you know, how pure it is. And then also, lots of times there'll be a germ. And you go, whoa, how did they do that? And it'll say 85 TZ. And that's the key. That germ test was a tetrazoleum test to tell them that those seeds are alive. And you have to take that with all the grains of salt that they come with. So again, demyth demystified. You can do your own tetrazoleum test. Now, be aware, tetrazoleum is a relatively dangerous chemical in the whole pantheon. It's poisonous. You don't want to be licking your fingers. You want to be aware of what you're doing. But you can still, if you follow the rules and do it safely, you can do your own TZ tests.
Interesting. So the tetrazoleum test, I just looked this up.
Right.
Is based on the ability of living tissues to reduce a colorless salt, tetrazoleum chloride, into the red compound formazan. It is not only useful for seed viability testing, but also tissue damage assessment.
There
Interesting.
You go.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, now you're, if you're listening to this podcast, you are an expert. Go out, or could be, go out and get some experience.
There you go.
Roll up some rolls of seeds and start looking. It's fascinating. This was one of the best things we did in our seed schools. We would always do this live, and we would have rolls that we had done the week before so people could unroll and count and look. Yeah. Or we'd do them on a Monday, and we had 9-8 day seed schools. By the end of the week, people's own seeds had started to germinate. And it was always one of the most engaging parts of seed school. You actually get to look in and see what's going on. Do this in the winter instead of diving into seed porn, which is what we call it when you look at all the colored juicy pictures in the magazines, right, in the catalogs, and dream about when you can plant again. Instead of doing that, do some germ tests. Way better. Get more useful information out of it. And then go down to your local seed exchange or seed library and strike up some stories and get the real seeds that are adapted to your area that people are discovering in this remaining diversity that are actually going to work better for you.
Nice. Thanks, Bill.
Yeah, thank you.
So you're not here live right now. You're on a plane somewhere. So we pre-recorded this. Tell us where you're going to be when this is airing.
I'm going to the Northeast Grain Growers Conference. It's being held this year in Burlington, Vermont. This is one of the first times they've all gotten back together live after COVID. Mm-hmm. And I've been asked to come and speak about the network of Grainiacs that we helped facilitate the creation of in the West. We had almost 300 people sign up to do trials on small amounts of heritage and ancient grains. And then if and when they could, they would send us back seeds to all of these really hard to find grains. And then we would send them out to other people. And we did that for 6 years and grew this network up. And people all over the world are trying to figure out how to get a local grain economy going again for their economic reasons and for their health.
Yeah.
Right. That's a lot of what's driving it, the gluten issues and other things. And yeah, I'm not a great grain grower. I'm a great grain tester on a really small scale.
Yeah.
But it turns out that's a really important part. The farmers that are actually going to grow these grains at scale enough to make money at it don't have time to do all the small scale testing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm part of my message for this conference is that we need to work together more. Right now, there's a lot of farmers who see gardeners and go, oh, that's not real, too small. And a lot of gardeners that go, oh, God, those big commodity farmers, they're the problem. When actually they both need each other. And so it's fun to reintroduce them to each other.
And you told me a story about Grain R&D. They're an organization in the Phoenix metropolitan area about how you gave somebody a handful of something. Tell me about that.
This is the story we're hearing all over now. I just heard it in Idaho. We gave somebody a handful of Sangaste rye. And last year they grew 6 acres and have 6 tons sitting around in their barn. And all of that came out of a handful. And the Grain R&D story is that we gave them a handful of purple Tibetan barley. And it's a 1,000-year-old variety of barley from Tibet. It grows up to 10,000 feet, reputedly. I haven't seen it. But handed it to them. These guys are outside of Phoenix. And I came back. It must have been 3 years later. And I walk into their big new warehouse. And there are 1,000-pound totes. That's how they ship grain now. You put them in those nylon bags and put them on pallets. That way they can stack them and ship them in trucks. 1,000-pound totes stacked clear to the ceiling in this warehouse, 7 or 8 high. This the end of this warehouse is just filled with these totes. And I'm used to small amounts of heritage grains. Right. Travis, what is that? He goes, oh, Bill, that's Tibetan purple barley. And I go, what? I go, that's more Tibetan purple barley than probably anywhere else in North America. I know, because we sourced and all we could get was little handfuls. How did, he goes, Bill, it works really well here. And that's the story. You can take one plant and get 50 seeds. Those 50 seeds the next year will be a pound. That pound will become 100 pounds. And that 100 pounds can plant an acre, becomes tons.
Wow.
This is what the big guys have to understand, is that we're here to help you scale up. We know it's not worth it economically for you on a small scale. But where are you going to find Tibetan purple barley? We found it through our network of small growers.
Yeah.
And that's really what, that's the magic, is trying to knit together. A local grain economy will have gardeners growing and testing new diversity that don't know what they're doing, and farmers that can actually produce stuff once you scale up and have the equipment and machinery to do it.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, it's the future, so bright.
Gotta wear shades, man.
Yeah, we're on it. And people all over this. So I've been mailing seeds all over the world to people. I had a woman call me. She was crying because she found a variety of wheat that we listed that her grandfather grew in Italy, an old heirloom variety from Italy. It's her family heritage. She's had gut problems. Now she's coming back home. She wants to grow grain. She had heard stories about Timelia. And now, and she goes, then you guys have two packets left. And I go, yeah, we do. And she goes, send them to me, please. And I did. And I said, and please send back twice as much. That's all we ask. We can grow this whole network this way, and somebody else can find it. It's really some of the most rewarding stuff I do. Get involved, people. Learn your germ tests. Grow your own stuff. Try new things. That's the message that comes through these podcasts week after week.
Excellent. So let's just talk about Seed School Online just a little bit. Give me 2 minutes about what it is. Seedschoolonline.com.
Yeah. If all this is getting you excited and you don't know what to do, go to seedschoolonline.com because 40 years of experience on how to get you up and running from zero to 60 is in that program. And it was done at a time in my life where I was on. All my switches were on. It was like, get the jazz band back together. I could get it back together, but it wouldn't be as good as it was in those days. So I'm going to be 70 this fall.
Wow.
And I've got more experience. I've got more of those mistakes. I know what not to do, but I'm not sure I'm as good at delivering information or as synthesizing it. And so that's what Seed School Online is. And we've had people take the course and start their own seed companies if you really want to get involved. And that's what I want you to do. I want you to become a seed teacher, a small seed company, start a seed exchange, do a seed library. As I said, in hundreds, if not thousands of years, and they look back at this era, this is what the most important thing humans should be doing. We'll never get it back. It'll be gone forever on this rocky planet. People will go, what? You had all of that stuff and it's gone?
No.
Help us keep it from being gone.
Wow, perfect. Thank you. Seedschoolonline.com. You can find out about it. We have it at a really special price right now, so you should go check that out.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Greg. It's online because of you.
Thanks. I'll take it. I appreciate it. And it's online because of you too, because you delivered some great content. All right.
All right.
Thank you for being here, and safe travels back to Arizona. And then we will see you in April.
Yes. Can't wait.
Looks like It looks like April's talk chat is about seed-borne diseases.
Oh, there we go.
There you go. All right.
All right.
Thanks, everybody.
Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Urban Farm Podcast. Remember to listen for tips, advice, and resources to help you on your journey with urban farming. You can find us on the web at urbanfarm.org or send us an email to podcast@urbanfarm.org. In the words of Vincent van Gogh, great things are done by a series of small things brought together. Be encouraged that with each lesson learned and skill developed, you are one step closer in the direction of your dreams.